together, we die together. And we bad boys for life. Get busy living, or get busy dying.
Gang first, last.
I am not entertained! I am not entertained!
Welcome to Brews and Reviews with Mick and Pat. I'm Mick.
And I'm Pat.
And each week we sit down with you degenerates to pretend we're certified Cicerones and cinephiles.
That is right. So grab a cold one and join us as we review True Brewing's Skull Seeker and John McTiernan's Predator.
And if you've been with us before, you know what time it is.
Release the Kraken!
Ooh!
Foaming up.
So, spoiler, I've had this beer. I had this beer last night. Came in a 4-pack. And I was thinking to myself while I was looking at the awesome art on the can. I was like, Skull Seeker. Wait a second. That'd be a perfect beer for the Predator movie. Because the Predator is collecting dude skulls. And so I texted Pat and I said, bro, Predator review, like we've been talking about, we can do it tomorrow. I got a good beer. And he said, game on. So I hope that it doesn't disappoint, Pat, because we've been trying to find a Predator beer for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this one. I was like, this is so metal, just like the Predator.
It is. And I had a little sip. And it tasted good. I'm about to take another one.
I think I grabbed the That's can good. I knocked over. I got a big head on my beer.
You grabbed the wrong one.
Yeah. But Pat, I also, you know, I should disclose this too. I'm very biased to True.
Mm-hmm.
Trove.
I think it's True.
Trevu?
I think it's just True.
Which weird is if you Google it or you type it into like Drizzly,
mm-hmm.
you have to type it TRVE.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of those ones where like we just typed our name weird.
Right.
You can't type it TRUE because there is a different, there's different breweries that are like,
mm-hmm.
or wineries, you know? So, yeah, this one, True Brewing Co. I found them a year ago in Colorado, maybe a little bit longer than a year ago, but I just remember they had some kind of really metal looking kind of goth emo vampire beer that was in like the seasonal October beer areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I grabbed it on a whim and it was so good. It was so good. And the can art just stuck with me. So I went back for some more. And they were kind of running out, but I was like, no worries. They'll get restocked. They got, you know, they got their own shelf here. And dude, they never got restocked. And I could not find them anywhere like across Colorado. And I knew there was a tap room,
mm-hmm.
but I was like, I just, every time I thought to go buy beer, I looked for them. I could never find them anywhere. On Drizzly, they were out of stock in every single store. Mm-hmm. Like I started putting in random zip codes, just mm-hmm. trying to find the closest one. It was never in stock. And so then I saw just about a year later, they're all in stock again, right after October into November and December. So a lot of them are the same beer that they had in stock last year.
Hmm.
And I think they are like such a small batch craft brewery that I really do think they only like do a year, like an annual release. And once it's sold out, you got to wait till next year.
That's it. Unless you go to their brew house or
that,
something.
That could be total conjecture. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I haven't seen this one around. I've seen it occasionally. I recognize the, you know, the True with the V, but super cool looking can. I am a sucker for matte black.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You're not a glass, but words. You're not a gloss back.
Gloss black. No, matte black, man. I love it. I had my motorcycle in college. I just bought rattle cans of matte black, just flat black paint, just sprayed that thing up, murdered it out, as they say.
Yeah, sometimes you have to murder it out.
Exactly. And so I like this. The can's just basically all black, but then they have a skull on the front with some swords running through it. And the swords have a little bit of a...
Some Nordic.
Yeah, some Nordic looks to them. A little bit of a shine. A little like a holographic Pokemon card action.
Only the blades.
Mm-hmm, yeah, just the blades. Then the cool, you know, like the... It is a blonde ale with that Skull Seeker is written in gold. I like it. Super simple design. Just, I think, you know, skulls are like... Some people don't like skulls. Some people really are super into skulls. I'm kind of in the middle.
I think, but it's all about the taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But like, the...
I do think a lot of skull stuff is overdone too much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like, you know, we were just talking about Danzig, song Mother, from one of their albums. And that album, I think, is tasteful skull art.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's... Less is more, like shadowed, you know, two-tone.
Yep. And so I like this can. It just looks cool. Looks like you're holding something awesome. And what else does this can have to say on the back? It says the malt is Troubadour Truth, but truth spelled with a V. And then the hops, we've got Magnum, Grüngeist. Is that how you would say that those two dots above the U? Grüngeist?
The Ule or whatever that's called?
And Citra. It's brewed and canned in Denver, Colorado. It's a one-pipe can and 5.1 ABV. And so, pretty clean look. And the company, True Brewing Co., they're kind of aloof. You know, there's not like a whole lot out there about them on the interwebs, but I did some digging, just a little bit, trying to figure out what's going on, and they were, but you know, their website's kind of sparse. Usually, that's my main source material for this part of the show. But they opened in 2012, and the owner, his name is Nick Nuns, and he was a heavy metal fan. For a long time. As a teenager, I think he played in some bands and loved metal. And so when he started this brewery, he wanted it to be for metal heads. And so all their artwork, all of their kind of vibe of their shop, it's all, you know, lots of flat black, matte black going on in the place. Quite a few skulls too. And they're always playing heavy metal in the brew pub. And they are located, downtown Denver. And they have also a Music City Hot Chicken serving food at the brew house. So not a bad place to go grab a good beer and some good chicken.
It's kind of savage because I think Music City has their own beer and it's not that good. Like they have their own branded brew beer.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, does anyone even get that?
Yeah.
You know, this A++ brewer is the place you're serving chicken out of.
Yep. But
one thing I think you didn't know on the can that I thought was pretty cool here in the back, the perforated label all the way around. And what's that say down there, Pat?
What does it even say? Oh, this can is recyclable. That part? Yeah.
Yeah, but above it, it's way more metal.
Oh, rip the beer, toss the label, recycle the can.
There you go.
That part?
Yeah.
Yeah. Craig. Craig hasn't messed up in a long time.
No, he's been a good boy.
But
I'll put some beer in my mouth and spit it down whole ad.
Where are we keeping him? But he doesn't have our tunes going.
Oh,
and
they'll be going in post.
It's just harshing my mellow, as they say. But man, Music City Hot Chicken. I don't know if they're metal. Maybe I don't know. They probably think they're metal enough to keep up with metalheads.
They ain't metal enough.
I don't know if they are. You know, maybe they are. Maybe they are. They're the nice metalheads,
like SpongeBob.
Like SpongeBob. So that's the. That's the brewery. That's really all I have on there. They're located in Denver, started in 2012. They like metal, and they like to collab with like concerts and stuff and coming through the area and the music scene down there.
Gosh. I will say this four pack for this. Mm-hmm. Take a guess how much it costs.
I don't know. Is it 15? Is it?
Some of them are. Yeah. But this one wasn't.
This one, because this one doesn't. You know, I'd say this one, a fair price on this is probably like $8.
Oh, okay. It was $10, $9.99 for a four pack. But they're tall boys and they're craft brewery, very independent and rare, dude. It's commodity.
Yep.
I tell you what, I'd pay $20 for their four packs. I would. Yeah. I'd pay $20 for season, like all year round available New Belgium beer. And I feel like a fool.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But again, New Belgium, if you want to sponsor us. anyways, all that said, let's do some sips and some swishes here. I've been kind of letting Pat get some flavors, taking my time because I already know I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, like, right off the top, it does kind of remind me of, like, a little bit of mead. You know? It's a little soft with some sweetness and citrusiness to it. I think the strongest flavor is kind of a little bit of a dull honey sweet.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Kind of taste that too? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just like a... With these blonde ales, you don't have flavors attacking you like you'd have in some of like the dark stouts and things we've been trying to. And so for these ones, it's just really mild. But the main flavor in there is some sort of like honey wheat. Is this a wheat beer? Is a blonde ale a wheat beer?
I think just about all beers are wheat beer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Except for Guinness.
Yep. This is true.
I don't know, man. You know, you're the one that was supposed to research the ingredients in the brewery, you know. I would say it definitely tastes me more like a softer honey wheat with citrus. And I think like when it says citrus, I actually really do taste a very balanced citrus flavor here. It's not overpowering and kind of orange peel flavored. Like sometimes the citrus is too strong and I think it tastes like orange peel. And other times it's just not there at all. And I think this one's really, it's there and you recognize it, but it's certainly not the only flavor. I wonder if one of the hops has that kind of honey flavor coming into it. You know what I mean? If one of these Magnum or Hugendheist.
And a blonde ale, generally, while it is a catch-all term for a couple of various styles, it's generally a beer in the cream ale and Kolsch realm. And so.
I do like my Kolsch's.
Interchangeable with golden ale, summer ale. Blonde ale first came onto the scene in the late 1800s as a lighter alternative to pale ale. And so
do you have like a Kolsch that sticks out in your mind? I remember I had like a raspberry Kolsch once, and I thought it was a very delicious pinky beer. I think it was maybe by Prost.
I was about to say Prost's Kolsch is the one I like. I was trying to look up the name, if it has a name, but yeah, Prost's Kolsch is, they have a good one.
But anywho, let's do that good old swish test. Folks, if you've been with us before, you know what that is. But for all of you new listeners, all of our listeners in India, and ironically, 2% of our listeners are in Israel. Look that up. The swish test. Take a little spoonful of your beer into your mouth. Let it roll down the back of your tongue like you're teasing your gullet and you're about to swallow. But then you just let it roll off the sides, down between your molars and your tongue, and then get under that tongue. And then switch your tongue side to side. Really kind of aerate. Do a little bit of a push and pull with your cheeks. And then let it kind of come back together just above your tongue, behind your teeth. Put that tongue against the roots of your mouth and push the beer through your darn teeth. And Pat, what are you getting? What kind of nuts are you getting while I do the swish test? Because it's impossible to... I'm working on my ventriloquism so I can say
it. Do it at the same time.
Yeah, say it in the mic while I'm doing it.
You're going to get beer everywhere. Yeah, no, I think that I'm going to say like the creaminess comes through. That's the main... Like if there's, you know... It always seems like there's one flavor during the swish test that's really... accented or really like shines through, and that's just like if some like kind of like cream soda-y, just creamy. That's what I was, like the taste goes away and it just tastes creamy to me. That's,
well, yeah, cream, you know? Cream of wheat.
Yeah, yeah, that's the main
it
thing.
It is, like this, ironically, I think with the switch test, when there's a citrus note, it gets stronger, like almost overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I do agree. I think that is mostly just like a, it tastes like a kind of sweet, foamy beer head when you swish it around and really aerate it. Which, you know, makes sense. You kind of think swishing around would get most beer to kind of taste like its head.
Mm-hmm.
But some beer, I think when you swish it around, just you get all those unique flavors out. And this one, I don't know. I think it's pretty balanced. Like there is no particular overpowering thing. There is just that nice kind of balanced cream flavor. And I'm ready to rate it. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm ready. What, Pat, this is your first true beer. I will say I've had some beers by them that are like not misses, but just not going to make a lasting impression.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other ones I've had where, you know, I've already said it, like it made a huge impression. And I wait yearly now for this to come out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like.
Look at the can. Look at the can again.
I know. Here's the problem. I'd say it's one note that is funny is like you would never grab this can if you just had to like blindly grab this to be like okay, grab the beer based off the picture and what it looks like that you want it, how you want it to taste. It's like not, you know, like
I don't know. I would.
No. But I mean like to get this taste.
Oh sure, yeah.
Like you. This is
some nightmare fuel beer.
This is nightmare fuel. The dark stout, like the cold Yeti winter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give it one thumb.
Okay.
But I'm borderline.
Yeah.
Going higher.
I just want you to know, I'm pretty fucking pissed.
Yeah.
the fact that this gets the same rating. As the holiday ale, this gets the same rating as the holiday ale. That is a crime.
I know. It's like
True Brewing. I know you're metal. We can do some kind of blood sacrifice seance with Pat if you want. I don't even care anymore. I didn't mean that.
No,
you're quiet. I bet people thought I heard your feelings.
No, I'm thinking. I'm just thinking because like traditionally in my mind, like I have reserved the two thumb up spot for. Like five beers that I've had before. And like, it's just kind of like they're like top staples.
I'll let you sit.
If I had to drink this beer for the rest of my life and it was the only one, I wouldn't be sad.
Yeah.
So that being said, I've got to bump it up to the two.
You're
going
to bump it up to the
I'm
two.
I'm giving two thumbs.
Two thumbs. Wow. Wow. Well, okay. So I'll justify my reasoning, you know, too, as well.
You have to come in here with like a zero thumber after all that talk.
Like, I don't like it that much. I just want to gaslight you, bro. No, just kidding. I like it a lot, of course. But the truth is that you see this beer or any of their other beers and the artwork, the unique naming that you recognize of like what they're trying to say, but you're like, why are they spelling it that way? All of it feels the names too. Skull Seeker, Blonde Ale. You're like, damn, the last Blonde Ale I had was like Field Day or something. You know what I mean? It's like something nice and sensitive,
like the Sun Seeker.
Yeah. Anytime you grab a can that looks like this, you're taking a risk, right? You're like wondering, is it all marketing?
Yep.
You know, and I think the reason I like it so much is because it feels like I took a risk and I was rewarded for it. You know, when I have True Brewing Co. beer, it feels like they are like, we know you're probably scared. It's like that goth girl. You're working up the courage to like ask out on a date and you're like, she probably doesn't want to go on a date with me. Look at me. I wear t-shirts that aren't black and I wear baseball caps. And you ask that goth chick out, and sometimes you get rewarded with the, yeah, sure, you can pick me up at, you know, 7 p.m.
Reminds me of like a Weezer song. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
No, which one?
Oh, about a walk. She has a Walkman. And she's a it's like a grunge girl, but yeah, it's like he's got no shot with her, and he's just living on a prayer, just hoping
you can always shoot it, bro.
Yeah, you got to shoot your shot.
Worst case scenario, she puts out her cigarette on you. You still feel good about it. No. So I think the beer is great. It's delicious. I think it hits everything it's going for. I think the marketing is perfecto. I've never seen branding as just enticing as well as looking like high grade artwork. So with that, two thumbs for me too. So four thumbs on the Mick and Pat show for True Brewing Co.'s Skull Seeker. Let it be known. And go out and get yourself some while it's in stock at your brewery stores. I don't even know if it's like actually available outside of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can order some, do it, because it's definitely worth the order and cherishing the sips of it. I don't want anyone to be distracted. I'm not saying this is liquid gold,
right?
But I am saying it's like it is definitely a beer that is way batting above its average. Dude, $10.
Stock up your Mormon Apocalypse cage right now. Yeah, exactly. If you have a Mormon Apocalypse cage in the bottom of your basement, filled it to the brim with this stuff. Buy.
What is the difference between a normal Apocalypse cage and a Mormon one?
The Mormon ones are very legit.
Like Mormons own these, or these are ones to keep the Mormons out?
No. This is like if a Mormon builds a house for themselves, they incorporate into the plans a very dope.
Are you for real?
Room to keep all the stuff in for the apocalypse, because they're post rapturous, and so they got to be ready for it.
Oh,
so without that we can't get all the way down there. But anyways, Mormons got good prepper vibes. But I said Weezer. I can't believe I did that. It's Bowling for Soup. Girl, all the bad guys want.
Anyways, I do love Bowling for Soup. 1985 is just a classic.
I once had that stuck in my head for 24 hours straight. That is a different story for a different time, though.
Okay. Acid. Moving on. Get ready for... not really going to be a review of Predator. Let's be real. Predator by John McTiernan. If this is not the Predator, as Pat corrected me earlier to make sure I didn't misspeak, it's not Predators. It's not Alien versus Predator. It's just Predator. The original one with Arnie and Carl Weathers. And with that, great movie. Most people don't even know it's directed by. Directed by John McTiernan. I think he's done some other good movies, right, Pat?
Die Hard,
he did do Die Hard. Yeah, okay.
He did Predator and then Die Hard.
Solid batting average, dude, yeah. Right there. All out of the park.
Just hang it up after that.
The lead of the movie, easily, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. But I would say, in watching the movie the first time as a kid, like the first time I watched it, I did not think Arnold was the lead right away.
Right, yeah, not until like halfway through, I feel like.
Yeah.
When he's... undoubtedly the only possibility to be the lead at that point.
Okay, so this guy's the big... okay. Supporting cast, Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed. He plays Dylan. Mm-hmm. Dylan, you son of a bitch! And Kevin Peter Hollis. A lot of people are like, who dat? Well, that's the guy who played the Predator. 7'2" actor. He also was King Kong at one point, but want to shout out to him because most people don't know who the dude under this suit is. Elpidia Carrillo, Bill Duke, Jesse Ventura, of course, senator of some part of California, governor, not governor, but he was a senator. Maybe no, it was not California, Nevada, Arizona.
Wait, a guy who was in this movie became the governor of Nevada?
No, sorry. Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California one point. Jesse Ventura, look it up. He's either the senator or governor of... like Nevada or Arizona, New Mexico, maybe.
Okay.
It's some Southwest state.
But still, there was a... this movie was...
this is career maker.
Good enough that you could become in charge of a state.
Yeah. Sonny Landham and Shane Black. Shane Black, ironically, went on to direct the movie Predators, which sucked balls. But just watch The Nice Guys. That is a great movie by Shane Black. Anyways... the plot summary of the movie, if you can't remember, because you only remember half the movie growing up as a kid, it's a team of commandos on a mission in Central American, in a Central American jungle. It's not described, and that was intentional. They find themselves hunted by an extraterrestrial warrior, which one thing that I will say, first time watching it, wasn't even sure that it was an alien until like way into the movie. Like part of me was like, it is the ghost of the jungle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just flashing its eyes.
And
I guess also the plasma cannon part, I don't know why I was, how I was justifying around that. I was like, maybe that's Kamehameha. You know, maybe it's Goku out there.
Something wild, some wild thing. And the we are, by the way, we're smoking cigars because Arnold was a fervent advocate. Ardent, I'm trying to say, whatever he's a, he loves his cigars. He loves them so much that he just always has them on set. He's always smoking them all the time. He'll even be smoking them like in the scene of a movie just because he wants to be smoking them, and it's not necessarily his character's role, but it always fits the character well. But I heard a story about Carl Weathers and this on this movie set. Carl Weathers, like athlete, like healthy, not going to touch smoking, not going to be a part of it. And finally, on this set of Predator, after a while, Schwarzenegger broke him down and he had kept offering him cigars. And he's like, nah, I don't need that. And then finally, he accepted it. And then he, and this was an interview with Carl Weathers, like when he's an old man. And he's like, yeah, I smoked that cigar and I've been smoking them ever since.
Shame on you, Arnold.
Hooked them.
Yeah, no, that's great. Ironically, this movie is sitting at a 47 on the Metascore, but a 7.8 on IMDb. So make of that what you will. That's like some pretty drastic differences in scoring, right? When it comes to aggregate review sites. But the Predator, man. All right, so getting started, Pat, let's kind of do what we did for Die Hard a little bit, since we both know we love this movie. You saw it for the first time way later in life.
Way later, like 6 months ago.
Yeah, and first time I saw it, we were already talking about this earlier, but I'll say it for all of our listeners, all of our kin. I saw it Wednesday. So if you're from America, you're probably familiar with, like, as a kid growing up, schools used to do this thing. I don't know if they still do it with the same kind of break. You know, things have changed, but we didn't get a full week off for Thanksgiving. We would get Thursday and Friday off. And it was awesome because Wednesday felt like Friday.
Yeah.
And I remember the Predator came on while I was at home on Wednesday night, staying up late, excited for Thanksgiving Day and all that tomorrow. And Predator came on AMC, which was channel 64 at the time. And just seeing the movie at that age of like 2003, you know, just had a pretty big impact on me as a kid and like what I wanted to do and what I thought was cool. So you saw it really recently as an adult, which I think was probably a totally different experience. I bet you never really found yourself afraid like a lot of people are the first time they watch this movie.
Right. Yeah, I think because, you know, as I watched it, I was trying to put it through a lens of watching it as like a 13-year-old, or as like, you know, as someone who also someone who hasn't consumed media throughout the 2000s, 2010s now, and then now 2020s, like just being an 80s movie. So like, cause like growing up, even I remember like a classic thing of my people in my parents' generation would say that like when they saw the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz, it scared the crap out of them, like scared them bad, real bad. And they like they couldn't sleep that night after seeing it. And then you watch that stuff now and you're like, dude, like it's basically like a Sesame Street puppet flying around. That's not scary at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so now, but I will say this, the Predator remains scary.
First time you see him, or like, are you talking like the first time it's revealed, not just invisible, or what do you mean?
I mean, I'd say that both, because one, the directing and the mystery of what is going on is scary. You just don't know what is causing this havoc.
Just the flashing.
Yeah. And like the complete destruction. There's no like, once he gets you, there is no fighting him.
Yeah.
There is no, like, there's nothing to do. That plasma gun just makes you go bye-bye.
And it, like, okay, help me out. You know, like I said, it's, I still really do see it in my mind from the view of a child. Like, even though I've seen it probably 20 times. You don't really get much scenes or indication of what it is or its presence really until it gets Shane Black, his character, right? Like, that's the first time you see it really grabbing, physically interact with the environment. Because I know the camera zooms in on points, like, leading up to that, and you're just trying to look for it in the jungle. But you don't really, I think, see it, right? Because even then, everyone thinks, like, the skinned up other team is just from the gorillas.
Because and even then, I think in that part, isn't the cloaking device still on? Like, and you,
like,
just,
you mean when it, like, when they see the guys hanging from the trees?
Or when, like the first time you really see any of it, all you see is, like, a weird silhouette of a cloaking device.
No, yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. But I don't think, I think it's, like, forgettable that that thing's out there and not just, like, an animal in the jungle.
Right.
Until it kills Shane Black. And then when it kills him, that's when you see, like,
some
the
humanoid silhouette
cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then you know it's on, and the,
you're like, wait, I thought this was a war movie.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. This isn't Commando.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, I think that's the thing too, that probably got people so much was, like, they, when, even though I knew, cause like at this point, lots of Predator sequels had come out and I'd, you know, but I was still in my mind kind of like, wait, is this like a, cause we got the thermal imaging and like this thing. And I'm like, is this a, and you have some CIA plot line going on, what's going on. And in my mind, I was like, is this a, just a high tech enemy?
Yeah.
You know, even with like the plasma stuff, like, is this a high tech enemy? What's the deal? And like, really, even until the cloaking device gets malfunctioned and you see it, you're like, oh no, that's an alien now.
Snowman.
Like up until that point, you just, like, you don't know that it's,
like, maybe they're sending them out to test some kind of new CIA weapon.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. And you don't realize it's like they're way in over there, way, way in over there.
Oh, yeah. I do remember, though, how you forget that there might be a horror element of this movie. Like, when they find the skinned up commandos, you're like, holy shit, damn, that's like, it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like, oh, I'm watching a movie where it's like CIA versus cartel.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, that's like out of Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
You know, that's Nightmare on Elm Street stuff.
There was no chance. There was no hope.
Yeah.
There was nothing to be done. No mercy to be pled.
And it's just so visceral, and they're really well done, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they're very wet, rubber skin bodies.
Ugh, yeah.
But then after that, it's just CIA. It's just military movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, they just go into this gorilla camp and just start blowing up huts, just hip firing, just wasting these gorillas. Like, they didn't, and you're just like, gosh damn, like, were they really a threat? And you kind of forget it's like a hostage rescue for some CIA informants, and in rescuing the informants and stuff like that is when it kind of comes back to full circle of like the being stalked horror movie, and it kind of slows down again. But the whole scene of Arnold and the gang attacking that like village hut is so just punch your lips out together, you know, make that kiss face while you're holding a fully automatic M16 or minigun and just letting the guns blaze away. And it's got some of the best one-liners of any Arnold movie, which, little trivia too, Arnold in what is that, improv the line "stick around" when he throws his giant machete knife and pins the dude to like the wooden post in the hut.
Oh yeah,
he's like, "stick around," and like, that is to this day one of the most quoted lines that me and my friends have between us for Arnold movies.
Oh, that is hilarious. And this was prime time for muscle man 80s movies.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's like, and it's become like a meme now too, but the scene where they Arnold and Carl Weathers slap hands.
Yeah, dude, that's the best damn handshake in any movie.
And they're oiled up. They've been oiled up literally, had to have been like 0.02 seconds before this. Like they like sprayed this, like, you know, greased them up and were like, and action, you know.
Just like, I'll never, I say that line out loud every single time I watch it. Like, Dutch, Dylan, you son of a bitch. And like, that grip, dude. That
grip. Yeah. And I think, I wish there was, maybe there is, but I wonder if there's a behind the scenes of like, they had to have gotten a pump before they did that. Like they were like, all right, you know, like, they're just over there with a little, like, you know, 15-pound dumbbell. Well, they repping it out like 1,000 times before they hit that thing.
They were known for getting up at like 3 or 4 a.m. to do some pretty intense workouts and get a burn going and dehydrate themselves before filming. Mm. And then they would often be working out in between scenes.
Oh, yeah, just to keep it going.
Keep the veins out, you know. But my buddy, I had a really good Ethiopian friend in college.
Mm-hmm.
And in one video we made together for a promotional video, we saw each other and we did like, we like were wearing the right shirts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We went to like clap and like, you could see we're both like not that built.
Right.
Like very obviously. And then we just cut right to that scene of like our arms clenching. And then like, and then afterwards it's normal again. And people loved it. People thought that was like one of the funniest edits.
That's great, dude. That's great. Cause yeah, it's like, hey, no shame in not being two of the most, literally the two most muscular men on the planet at that moment in time.
Yeah, no kidding, bro. It's like I'll never have arms that are 32 inches around.
Oh my goodness.
Like, that's bonkers. But anyway, also, fun fact trivia about that. Jesse Ventura, who plays Blaine, he's the dude with the minigun. And Shane Black's character says, Blaine, you're bleeding. He's like, he says the most stupid thing. I ain't got time to bleed. You're just like, the hell does that even mean? What do you mean you don't have time to bleed? Like, you're bleeding. You've been shot. But Blaine, played by Jesse Ventura, Jesse Ventura and Arnold were very competitive at the time. Mm. Arnold saw Jesse go for the role in audition. He's like, this guy's perfect. Immediately he walks in. He has this deep voice, this macho mustache. Just total man. But they were so competitive that they were often trying to punk each other during the workouts.
Mm.
So Jesse Ventura one time hurt, like before Arnold got to the gym, dumped a whole bucket of water on him and walked out right as Arnold was walking in to make Arnold think he had just done the most insane workout. Yeah, it just got in Arnold's head. Arnold, though, at one time was approached by Jesse saying, hey, man, let's have a measurement contest of our arms, of our biceps and triceps. Because someone had come to Jesse, and when they measured his arms, they said, wow, you were a whole inch. You got a whole inch on Arnold. And it was like one of the, like, you know, people who are on the crew and stuff tending to their makeup and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse was like, oh, yeah, all right, sweet. So I'll get him with this one. So he does that. And Arnold's like, yeah, all right, Jesse, let's measure our arms.
I think, did they make a bet on it?
They did. They made a bet. And when they did it, Arnold had a whole inch on Jesse. And Arnold knew he could get Jesse to do, like, make a bet on it or something. Mm-hmm. And he had put the assistant up to it. And he's like, go tell Jesse that he has 1 inch bigger arms than me. So we could punk him. It's just like one of those things. I'm like, damn, that's a long game, bro.
That's savage.
But anyway, cool stuff. I do remember being pretty astonished at the amount of blood, though, in this movie. Like, this is one of those movies that really, like, pushed it to the limit when it came to, like, blood effects and squibs.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, not sure how they did the hole all the way through Blaine's chest that you could see. Like, I'm still, like, not sure how they did that to this day. Like, when he first gets shot by the Predator's photon beam or whatever, it's not that big of a hole. But when he's down on the ground, you can see, like, a hole through his shirt and, like, throughout his back or whatever.
All the way through.
And I was just like, damn, like, that's insane. And I remember as a kid, I was just like, my brain has never had to comprehend something like this. Like, that is a lot of blood. The arm scene, bro, when Dylan's firing his MP5 up into the trees and gets blast off and his arm slow motion falls still, holding, like, all he did shooting the MP5 and he's just slow motion. Good. What about you? What are some of the violent, the deaths? Because honestly, it's, you know, once the guerrilla camp's taken over, it's just getting whittled down one by one after the party splits up.
Yeah, I forget which guy it is, but it's with the girl and the guy are together. I think it's as they're kind of realizing what they're dealing with. He might be the first one to get...
I think that's Shane Black's, right? And he's trying to help her?
Yep. Yeah, he's trying to help
translate.
Her. Yeah, and they're out. Like, then they're like kind of solo. There's a wait, and then...
And he gets disemboweled.
Yeah, he just gets messed up. And that's when you know it's on. And there's that, you know, that one. And then there's that part. Yeah. The scene where, like, I guess in my mind too, I didn't know that everybody was going to get smoked. So like when Dylan died, I was like, oh dang, you know, like when he gets, cause he dies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he dies hard. Yeah. Okay. I was like,
he gets his arm blasted off, and then he gets hit again in the head.
Like he gets smoked.
Or the chest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He gets smoked in the chest.
He's just done. Like, and it's not even like a long dying scene. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no like drawn out stuff. These people are just getting smoked.
Yeah, dude.
And so,
do you remember Bill Dukes?
Is that the one in the tree?
He's hiding in the in the tree, like the felon tree.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, got you now, motherfucker. And as he's looking, you see the three dots on his forehead.
Oh yeah.
And then the camera goes behind his head as it explodes like a balloon of blood out the back.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
Uh-huh.
That was, dude, that one was like, holy shit. It was like so much blood, which, fun fact, Bill Duke is in Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh really?
Which is ironic because they play Green Berets in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like a CIA team comprised of mostly Green Berets. Mm-hmm. And in Commando, Bill Duke and Arnold have a fight scene. And when they're fighting in this like classic 80s motel, Bill Duke has this knife on. He's like, this Green Beret is going to kick your ass. And Arnold's like, I eat Green Berets for breakfast. And it's just like, it kind of felt like a callback to this movie. But it might have came before this movie. But I just remember I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio on the couch was like,
yeah.
They were Green Berets in another movie. And so I always thought that was a really cool thing.
Oh yeah. And then when the spine gets ripped out.
Oh, like the silhouette of it?
Yeah.
I think that's Blaine's spine that gets ripped out.
Yeah, that's
like,
that
after
is,
he gets his body.
Yeah, that's the like the most class, like I feel like that one's stuck with that's the scene that everybody saw for like, all the rest of time,
especially the way it flopped.
Yeah,
like it was like oh, that's, is that a real backbone? Like is that just the back of a pig or something? Yeah
So I like that. I feel like that's the scene that stuck with everybody. Like, everybody can, like, everybody who's seen the movie knows that scene. It's burned in their brain.
How about the guns, bro? Let's give like do some justice to the gun porn here, you know, like some really great guns. You know, you got that, like, I think this was the first movie I saw the backpack minigun in.
Mm-hmm.
And just how that thing's just like, I still don't know how they did the special effects for mowing the jungle down, because they had everything fall like the right way as they're like just shooting God knows how many blanks into the woods.
Out into there.
But it really did look like that minigun was just mowing foliage at like the hip level.
Yep, because in this picture of like the entourage, we've got two MP5s. We've got a classic.
I think it's an M60 in the back, right?
Yeah.
That Max got.
And then we have a classic M16 with the grenade launcher.
Yeah, the M203 right there.
And then one of them has an M16 with a shotgun on the bottom.
That's right, yeah.
And then we also have the backpack minigun, which is the most ultimate weapon of probably all history. Because has the backpack minigun, does that get used?
I don't know if it ever was, bro.
Like, is that a weapon that's been used in warfare?
Yeah.
The backpack minigun.
I could see that having been like, if only that technology was available in World War II, that would have made sense. But like, I mean, because at least you're like got more range than a flamethrower,
right?
But I don't know if like it was ever used in modern war. I will say though that grenadier forend with the like it's just got the holes in it that look like they're you know kind of heat shield like mm-hmm. for the M16.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most like vibiest gun in mm-hmm. my opinion. Like that was always what I desired to own as a kid. Like I was like, if only I could get an airsoft or anything that looked like that, that would be the best vibe of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Just
the classic stock.
Even with that, like, you know, not like a full, like, not like the 30 round mag that it looks like in, I don't know, maybe it is. Oh, no, it's got the 30 round mag in it. Yeah. Excuse me, but I just always thought that was the coolest iteration of the M16. Okay, though. All right. So let's kind of get in to, I'll say it, like, I'm not above you pointing out to me like cheese in the movie, like mm-hmm. things that you think don't work or didn't mm-hmm. age well. Cause I definitely have complete rose colored lenses when viewing this movie, even today. Like, I don't think I'm capable of seeing mm-hmm. its flaws.
Right. Like I even think like MP5s in the jungle, that's a no go. Like is,
I don't know. I've never been a Green Beret.
Right. Like, I mean, like, I don't know if I know of any, people doing jungle warfare with just with anything smaller
9mm.
Yeah, with anything smaller than, you know, just a car.
Need a brush gun.
Yeah.
Need something that can really hit through the leaves.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that, but I mean, it's such a classic gun and you can slap it when you load it. So
also just the fact that they like one handed or dual wield it is just sick as hell.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which like I see that, I'm like, no way you could do that. But then I see Carl Weathers biceps and forearms, I'm like, he could do it though.
Yeah.
Wrap those straps around your forearm, you're good to go, baby.
Mm-hmm. And you know, as far as cheese in the movie, if you're watching it now for the first time, there's a lot of like nitpicky things, but
anything that like took you out of the movie, like anything that was like, ooh,
I think
that didn't look good.
I think all the thermal camera stuff did. Only because I've watched so much thermal camera video stuff now. Like I just was like, I was like, oh, they used glow in the dark paint on like it just looked, it just all looked like, you know, it all looked fake, which I know isn't the case. But now having watched so much modern like flare footage, that part did pull me out of it, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm seeing right now.
Mm.
You know, I think that if I'm not wrong, this was actually used like the first flare cameras that were out there.
I don't know if they did.
Mm.
I think they did a compositing trick, because if I remember correctly, the first like thermal heat flare color,
mm-hmm.
I think it came out after the movie, but I'm trying to find, because I mean thermal images, like being able to see heat signature
mm-hmm.
Through lens and filament has been around for a while, but I thought I remember somewhere a fact that was like yeah, like man portable infrared thermal with, you know, varying range colors of cools to warms colored mm-hmm. wasn't around yet.
Mm.
It was like very like, what's the term? It wasn't portable. You know what I mean? It was an emplacement. But I could be totally wrong on that. Prototypes of helmet mounted thermal imaging cameras were first publicized in 1992. So who knows? I also don't care. Because right. I think it holds up decently fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of what I would expect for the generation. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I always had beef with, though, even as a kid, was how the scorpion comes up on thermal imaging. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Bugs don't show up on thermal imaging.
Right.
You know, like, bugs are cold-blooded. You don't see them. They're as cold as
whatever,
the dirt.
Yeah, they're whatever the temperature is they're walking around in.
But, fun fact for all of those who also don't think the mud thing is real. Corridor Digital.
What is the mud thing? For
oh,
someone,
okay. So in the movie, Arnold is sole survivor. He's he's gotten
at this point, it's established that he's the lead.
I think, I can't remember if only the chick got to the helicopter, or if she got to the helicopter with one of the other guys that was injured.
I think just her.
Just her. Because I think, right, doesn't that guy get shot in the side of the head or something while they're running to the helicopter? Yeah. But she gets there, and then Arnold leads the Predator away because he realizes it's only shooting the people with guns.
Right.
And he tells her, he's like, no, don't pick it up. Get to the chopper.
Because it has some sense of sport or honor or something.
Yeah. There's no pride to be taken in killing defenseless things. As it's chasing Arnold, Arnold jumps off this cliff down into this river, like lake area coming from a waterfall. And he swims out and he thinks this thing's tracking him through the jungle. No matter how he tries to hide, somehow it can see him. And he's covered in mud and stuff as he comes out of the water, way more than you would be. Like, I fell into the muddiest clay water ever. Yeah. But he comes out and he hides. He just, like, is exhausted and lays against these bramble roots. And he's trying to cover himself in the roots. And as the Predator jumps into the water and comes out, its invisibility cloak starts to malfunction. And it doesn't seem to see him right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as Arnold's sitting there, he notices that a mouse is moving nearby. And the Predator confuses it for him based on its heat signature and shoots the mouse. And that's when he realizes the mud is covering his heat signature. And with that, a lot of people have always said, oh, that's hocus pocus. Your body heat would warm up the mud so quick, yada, yada, yada. And to that, I say go watch Corridor Crew's latest, well, I guess not the latest video anymore, but they have a video where they test it. And they have a guy just cover himself in good old mud pit mud from Texas. And hide in some, like just against the base of a tree. And everyone's using modern day heat signature cameras, various viewfinders for it, you know, whether it's the color graded thermal or just the infrared white to black. And no one can find him. And in fact, they think they see him and then they're just going in the wrong direction, looking at something else that's kind of popping up on the heat signature. And they only found him because his dog found him and sniffed him out.
Sniffed him out, huh?
And that's with like modern technology, like today's hunting thermal cameras. And so I just think, like, just goes to show, like, no, there's something to that. Like, and even as the mud dries on you, it doesn't heat up that much compared to like the surrounding environment. So I always thought it was cool. And now I think it's even cooler and like a legit option. Like, are you going to deceive a team of, you know, highly trained killers coming after you? Probably not. They're probably tracking you with more than just their thermals. But if someone tracking you with thermals from a drone or a helicopter and you got to lose them by, you know, you're running through the woods and you got to break contact and eyesight, line of sight, break it, cover yourself in mud. And as they kind of try to find you again, they'll have a hard time.
Because the Predator doesn't have much of a nose. His lips are taking up all of the snoz area. So especially if you're getting chased by the Predator, he can't sniff you out.
Speaking of that, what do you think of the Predator the first time you saw, like, the design, the face, like, the helmet is...
Yeah, it just was like, God, that's gross. You know, just like...
like a vagina.
Yeah, I was going to say it. It's like the most horrifying vagina
hoo-ha
in history. With tusks, multiple tusks and fangs,
mandibles,
layers and layers of teeth and things. But it's got
I think it has like the worst color that fish have, you know what I mean? Like, it's like that yellow, pale, freckled. It's just
the Predator's icky dude.
But tell me that's not some of the best like practical effects you've seen. All of the mandibles and stuff in the mouth were actually articulated by the actor within the helmet.
Really?
Yeah, they weren't remote controlled, so he was like, he was articulating all of it with his own mouth and chin.
Wow. Because it's disturbing for sure. And like the dreadlocks, the fishnets. Why is it wearing fishnet? I don't know, but it's scary. I think it's wearing fishnet because it's the easiest thing to hang skulls on. Because that's what it's got. It's got skulls hanging off of its fishnets, you know?
Yeah, and the Predator, too, like, it to me, I've always thought of this, and you might feel free to rebuttal on me, but it always, to me, came off as like the kind of like hillbilly alien. Like, I'm going to drop a shit ton of money on my gun and my sights, my optics, and I'll get my, like, my nods. But I'm going out in, like, my most cost-effective clothes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, oh, these pants, they're from Walmart. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's just like, go backwoods hunting in the marsh, you know?
No, you're not wrong. So I'm looking at, you're, like, you've got holy pants, you know, is it not a lot of gear going on as far on the rest of the body.
And I don't mean that in an insult by any means. Like, you know, there's a lot of good old Creole Southern boys who put all their money into their, you know, a reliable gun that can fire no matter how dirty the swampy water is, and good optics, good sights, but
they like their fishnets.
Yeah, they do. They love their fishnets underneath their camel trousers. Anyways, right. The showdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arnold's got this montage of setting up the traps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes from cat and mouse to mouse and cat, you know. Mm-hmm. A little bit of Tom and Jerry reversal. What'd you think? First time seeing that, you know, were you hyped? Were you like in the zone? Well, were you like,
I was
this is sick?
Yeah, I was, especially because they've, at this point in the movie, it's been proven to us that there is 0% chance of survival to fight this thing. There's no, if it gets you, you're done, you know? So it's like,
oh yeah.
Which is the best spot to find the hero of any story in. It's just, there's no chance.
Desperate, final stand.
Yeah.
Go down swinging.
And so the final showdown, you know, it's like, I love to any Home Alone style attack plan, you know, setting up traps, you know, outwitting if you're physically incapable of beating this thing, it's time to, you know, start outthinking it. Just some good old
and even then
fashion
though,
into, you know, rising to the occasion.
They don't make it stupid. Like it's
right.
It catches on. It's like, wait a second, he's got this shit rigged.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, come on.
It's not,
do it!
It's not like fighting a bear.
No.
You know, yeah, you're fighting an intelligent being.
And it's like, wait a second, you're down in this conveniently kind of carved out trench. I don't think I'm going down in there. Mm-hmm. This is like, oh man, it was so good. I just loved it because it felt very rewarding when he does finally get the kill. And Pat, how does he do it? How does Arnie beat the Predator? How does he
I'm trying to even remember.
If I remember, I think it's the log. I think he does get the log to swing.
Oh yeah,
and hit into the Predator.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it swings and takes him out, and then
he's all bloodied and broken ribs, broken back, probably.
And then what's the next most disconcerting thing after seeing it and seeing its nasty mouth is it like laughs or talks?
Yeah.
Does it say something?
I can't remember if it's like actually legible, but it's like mimic. You know, the
like,
whole movie
like mimic
it's mimicking.
Voice. Yeah,
and that's how actually Billy. Sonny was the actor for Billy. Billy becomes aware of it. And it's not because he has a sixth sense, but after he says a joke during, like, just after fighting the gorillas, him and Blaine laugh. And then, like, a moment later, something is laughing his laugh out in the jungle. And you can see it on his face where he's just like, the fuck?
Yeah.
That's exactly my laugh. And no one else really catches on to it because they just think it's Billy laughing. But yeah, the Predator's got its fail-safe protocol. Can't let them capture my technology if I'm defeated. And it pulls out its little, you know, touchpad, wrist pad, weird digital clock numbers in its Yautja language. And, you know, final Hail Mary tried to take Dutch out with it. But part of me wonders if it really was trying to take Dutch out, or if it was just like, get running.
Game over.
You won, fair and square, get going.
And I'd say like it lended itself to, if I had one critique of this movie, maybe would be that there was too much mystery, but maybe that's part of the best part about it. Like maybe it doesn't need a multiverse, multi-layered, super big backstory storyline. You know, this was just a standalone story of,
yeah,
you know, so part of the beauty of it was that it was just a movie about this interaction, this thing, and that it came in.
Totally, like, not undermined, but mm-hmm. like it blew away your expectations, because if you had seen any of the other 80s movies, you're like, this is going to be another Rambo or right. whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't a bad thing. But like when you're like, oh my gosh, it's not, is that an alien?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing changes.
You're like, I still don't know what that was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No answers.
What's going on?
Yep.
You know?
Cool cameo too that they did in honor of the guy and working in this super hot rubber suit in the jungle. The actor was the helicopter pilot.
Oh, really?
He was the black helicopter pilot in the end.
Like, nice.
That's funny. But it was too, like, later on, you know, there's like all this lore that comes out later on that like they actually knew the Predator was out there, and this gorilla jungle had not much to do with anything, and they wanted Dutch team to go out there so they could like study it.
Part of the CIA.
Yeah.
Thing,
yeah, which I thought was like fine. It could have like it was like more of that is revealed in like the second Predator movie, it's mm-hmm. Predator 2 Concrete Jungle or whatever with Danny Glover.
Mm-hmm.
All I said, I don't think there's a single movie that lives up to the original. The most recent one was called Prey, where it was the Predator fighting Native Americans and French fur trappers.
So they went back in time.
Yeah. And it was pretty cool because it's like it shows the Predator still using futuristic technology, but like he chose his equipment for the level of technology that the Prey had. You know what I mean? So he's not using his plasma blaster or plasma caster. He's using like bolus and like kind of darts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty cool. It wasn't like groundbreaking, I think, but it was pretty good. The scene of the Predator just fighting a whole camp of fur trappers was freaking lit, dude. It was it was awesome.
Because there's five Predator movies, not including Predator vs. Alien ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's, I need to, yeah. So Prey. So it's funny because so Predator came out 1987. Predator 2 1990. So just 3 years later. But then the next one we didn't get for 20 years.
Yeah.
Till 2010.
Which was Predators.
Predators.
And fun fact about that one, Lawrence Fishburne's character was originally supposed to be Arnie, but schedule wouldn't work because he was, I think, still governor at the time.
He's like, I can't. I have to run a state.
And it was going to be sick, though. Like, when you see that movie and you're like, oh, that would have been sick if it was Dutch instead of Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
Because Lawrence Fishburne does fine with it. I mean, but
it might have played, you know, it might have, like, the nostalgia factor might have,
the movie would have been like five times better,
yeah,
if Arnie had been able to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I got some trivia here. We've already mentioned some, the invisibility cloaking effect was achieved because they wore a big bright red suit, because that's contrasting with the jungle. Of course, you can't wear a green suit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was removed using chroma key, leaving an empty area. The take was then, so, you know, like back in the day, chroma keying it out, you just have a black spot going across the jungle. So to make sure it wasn't that, they repeated the take without the actors in scenes using a wider lens. And then the two takes were combined to have that like weird
silhouetted,
like peripheral. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how they did that back
optical
then.
Optical illusion. Yeah. It's because it turned out great.
Oh, yeah. Really good.
And it moves, you know, like it moves flawlessly. It doesn't look like green screen.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't. So I was wondering how they did that. That's a good way to do it.
Already got that fact about Jesse Ventura out there. The film was really hard, and a lot of the actors got like pain and suffering compensation because they often had
typhoid
to deal with
fever.
Yeah, no, they got leeches a lot. They got snake bites. Pretty rough humidity and bugs. The night scenes were freezing cold, and with Arnold in the mud, Mm-hmm. He was often like at risk of hypothermia because of how long mm-hmm. he had to just be caked in mud, and they would blow heaters on him
mm-hmm.
and it would just dry them. Yeah, but it wouldn't like cool. It wouldn't warm him up at all.
Yeah.
And he would drink what was known as Jaeger tea, which is a schnapps mixture to try to warm him up.
That doesn't actually warm you up. It makes you feel warm.
Yeah, no, but that was what I was saying. He would drink it so much to try to feel warm that he was drunk on a lot of scenes when he was in the mud.
You did your job, bro.
Arnold is on credit saying, "Get to the chopper," is his personal favorite catchphrase of all time in all of his movies. All even right. more than Terminator's "I'll be back." All
right.
After Dutch impales a bad guy, oh, I already said this, with on a wooden post with his machete and says, "Stick around." It was improvised. Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally the Predator. A lot of people know this. A lot of people don't know this, but he was originally a Predator, and he's kind of a short guy, and he was complaining so much from the red rubber suit that he was only on set for 2 days before he was let go for being small. And then Kevin Peter Hall was brought in to wear the red suit and kind of fill out the imposing figure of the Predator some more. the Predator's blood is a goopy substance combined with glow sticks and KY jelly. And then, of course, you already mentioned Carl Weathers got addicted to cigars from Arnold constantly having a box of them to share. Some goofs. There's a lot of continuity errors, and of course, in like scene to scene, camera to camera, cuts that don't always line up with where actors are standing or something, but who cares?
It was the 80s.
That still happens today. But some cool goofs. Throughout the film, the team use items such as grappling hooks and claymore mines. However, they are never carrying these anywhere on their body. Like, no matter what scene they're in, you're like, they don't even have a backpack.
That's a classic old movie thing where they just like show them have the gear at the beginning and then they all of a sudden have it later. Yep. Which I bet actors nowadays miss those days because now it's like they have to have it with them the whole time they're filming. You know, or like where it's like, oh, this, you have a giant mag light.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure you take it from the plane crash.
Oh, sure.
And because in scene 40, which I realize the plane crash is in scene 2, but in scene 40, you're going to need it for a little bit. Mm. And they're like, so I have to have it the whole time and make sure I have it every time. They're like, how about
I don't think I didn't worry about it. They got ADs on set.
I know, but
stuff.
Still, I just wanted to like, it's just like, how about we just find one in the shed? Scene 33, you know, whatever. Like, just like the
I'll take another flashlight.
Yep.
Ooh, wow, that cigar really changes the flavor of that beer a lot.
Oh, yeah,
that beer tastes whoa, huh? also, this is a really funny gift, in my opinion. There are a lot of common house plants in the jungle. Some still in their black plastic pots. Near the end, for example, when they start to go to the chopper, you'll see like just plants in pots. Like you don't really notice it because the scene's so fast.
Like, we're running out of budget. We got to return these to Home Depot after this, guys.
Well, like that's when you realize like they probably weren't filming in Mexico anymore for those scenes. Mm-hmm. Like those scenes were probably filmed on on the yard of a, you know, stage.
Some stage, yeah.
When the Predator, oh, yeah, I said this. When he picks up the scorpion, its infrared image shows the arthropod as warm and then cooling off rapidly after being stabbed. However, scorpions are cold-blooded to begin with and have little to no body heat.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, so our thoughts on Predator. Pat, what are your thoughts on Predator, man? Does it hold up? Is it still as good as everyone says it is? Is it overrated? You know, think about all these other great movies that come out of the 80s and early 90s. You know, Jurassic Park was only 6 years later.
Yep. Yep. And I think in some ways it does. Like, it's not going to disappoint. If you've never seen it before, you're not going to watch it and be like, that was pointless. Or like, that was so old and, you know, like. In that sense, it holds up over time. It still tells a good story, and you can watch it and enjoy it. I would say like the where the place it holds in the heart of the viewer, if you watch it as a kid or you watched it when it came out, it's going to hold a much nearer spot than if you watched it later on.
Sure, sure. I'm okay with that. I think though,
mm-hmm.
you have to watch some of the other ones
to see just how bad.
Just to like make you be like, damn, that first one is so good.
Yeah,
like you watch the others, you're like, how do they fuck it up? Like, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it is, I guess. Shane Black's, which is sad because he was, you know, he did The Nice Guys and then really went on this, you know, tour of I'm doing Predators and or The Predators or I can't remember what it was. And it's going to be awesome. It's, again, like supposed to be like a ragtag band of military experienced individuals fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was dog doo-doo, bro. It was just so not good.
Mm-hmm.
And so much like didn't make sense. And I also just don't think these movies are that entertaining when you put them in suburbia. Like, I think suburbia is great for like slasher horror stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream and all that. But when you're like extraterrestrial alien with super high technology and he's stuck in the suburbs of, you know, Indiana. It's just like, this is dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not nearly, this is kind of boring.
Mm-hmm.
That said though, I do think, in my opinion, it holds up really well. I do think though that it is a generational movie and that like at the time men and women both saw it and were like, how is this done? This is insane.
Mm-hmm.
This is frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think nowadays, every time I've seen a girl watch it for the first time in the 21st century, they're just like, huh? What? It's kind of gay that you guys like these big, sweaty, oiled up guys just saying one-liners. And I'm just like, you don't get it, okay?
You just don't understand.
So that said, I'm still going to give it... Ooh, gosh. I'm trying to take my rose-colored glasses off. I'm going to give it a thumb up. I'm still going to give it, you know, of course, a solid thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Borderline two thumbs just because of the nostalgia and the one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
How well it delivers on a twist into the sci-fi horror from, you know, action movie.
Muscle Man, machine gun holding movies.
Yeah,
I'd say the same. I'm a one thumb. It's like one of those ones like if you – there's no reason to not see it. You should see it, and the earlier you see it, probably the better. As far as you know, how good it's going to be for you, and I don't think I'd say if I could put myself all the way back in there, it's not a two thumber in that like I'm in the story and the characters that I'm like so in love with the character. Like, you know, like I don't like, I don't even know like when this movie came out, like how many kids were dressing up as Dutch. Maybe a lot were, but a lot were still dressing up as Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean? Like the, just the level of like, it was a good movie.
Yeah,
but it's not quite on the 2-star level. Probably even when it came out, it was a great blockbuster film. And unfortunately, the blockbusters are going by the wayside more and more every year. Like, I think the age of the blockbuster is well past, and now we'll get a good movie every now and again. And so, like, but this came out right in there in a time when they were just coming out with movies that it was like, the cool thing was like everybody went to the theaters. Saw this movie, enjoyed it, and didn't have anything really bad to say about it. They were like, they were wowed by it.
I guess during the time there was like, you know, that's why the critic score is sometimes
kind of weird. Because
a lot of critics nowadays are like, phenomenal movie from the 80s. Mm-hmm. People didn't know what they had.
Mm-hmm.
Times at the time, people were like, what the fuck is this movie supposed to be?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, maybe they weren't ready for it. Maybe they were worn out on like the Muscle Man films.
Which is kind of how I feel, you know.
Like superhero movies right now.
Yeah.
don't invent a new superhero and don't come out with one and yep. don't make another Marvel movie because we don't give a crap right now.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. All that said, though, Ken, thanks for joining us. We hope you all love the movie Predator. We hope you all like to quote one-liners. You know, this holiday season, have fun. Throw a knife into some wood and say, stick around. And yell to your family at one point. You know, I will say one of the funniest things I ever saw happen was during a Thanksgiving day. My uncle tripped and like as he was going up the stairs and I was in front of him and he had been chasing me, but like he tripped and fell. And as I looked back at him, he was like, get to the chopper. And like, and I just like ran away from him. And it was just one of the, like, it's just a classic, man. And when you know the right time to quote it, it's just appeases everybody.
Definitely.
So, alrighty. Well, thanks for joining us. Hope you get some True Brewing Co. beer and enjoy it. And we'll see you next time.
Till next time. Thanks for tuning in. If you love this episode, drop us a review. If you have qualms or comments, leave us a voicemail on our website. While you're there, check out our latest news, merch, and deals from our sponsors. Till next time, Ken.